Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Startup Sales. Really excited for this week's episode. We've got Peter Loving of UserActive with us. He is an expert in UI and UX, user experience and user interface. And today it's going to be a very interesting approach. He's going to talk to us about, you know, using the UI and the UX in order to convert trials, free trials into paying customers, or from extending the lifetime value of a customer using the UX. To also any kind of expansion and how to use that in your demo to your advantage. So it's a really interesting episode today, so let's get to it.
Welcome to the Startup Sales Podcast, where we dive into the world of sales and marketing. Join us as we interview founders and industry experts, uncovering their successes and failures in the market. Get valuable insights and learn from their experiences to boost your own sales strategies. And now, a word from this episode's sponsor. Are you tired of struggling to reach your sales targets? We believe in you get what you pay for. That's why you pay only for the leads you get. Introducing Startup Sales, the leading growth hacking agency that guarantees meetings with your prospects. With our proven strategies, we'll bring you between 15 to 30 qualified prospects every month. And here's the best part. It's risk-free. You only pay us upon success. Don't let your competitors get ahead. Let Startup Sales supercharge your sales pipeline today. Visit us at startupsales.io. Startup Sales, your ultimate growth hacking partner.
Peter, I'm really excited to have you on. I've been following you for quite some time, so welcome.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me. I'm also a listener of your podcast, so excited to be here with you.
Lovely. Can you give a little bit of background about yourself and your experience for people to know?
Sure. So I run an agency called UserActive. We are a SaaS design agency. So we do UI UX design for SaaS companies. We're actually designing the product interface. And I have a background in product design. So I've been working in this space for 15 years, designing many products as a freelancer and a consultant. And 3 years ago, I launched an agency so that we could just, serve more SaaS companies. Designing products and solving problems is a passion of mine. So that kind of work really keeps me engaged. I find it fascinating.
Great, terrific. So let's just jump into it. And what does UI UX have to do with sales?
So SaaS is really like software as a service. So nowadays, it's just mostly all software. It's all in the cloud. And software is all about delivering a product that solves a problem or delivers value to users or customers to either improve the way they're doing something already, to make their job easier, or to solve a difficult problem that they're having. So typically, these are workflows. These are day-to-day workflows that become automated in a product or service. And UI UX plays such a big role in making sure that that product delivers. User experience is all about making sure that the time that the user spends inside the product is engaging, that the experience is positive, that it's easy for them to do and achieve what they need to do. The product is intuitive for them to use, so they don't have a lot of friction or they don't struggle too much, and they can become a loyal user of a product. And then user interface design is really important because that's really giving a product an aesthetic that appeals to your prospect or your customer base. So it does relate quite closely to user experience because UI reflects the experience. You'll introduce colors, layout, graphics, buttons, iconography that all relates to the functionality that also contributes to how intuitive a product is. But user interface design also makes sure that a product is shown in its best light, that the product looks modern, that it's eye-catching, that it's clean, fresh, and it's a pleasure to see. So when you have great functionality coming from UX and you then add a really great user interface design, that really appeals to people who are selecting their product. And SaaS is a busy market space. So, you know, for any type of kind of like sector or problem that you have, there's usually a bunch of SaaS products that you can choose between. So quite often, something that will make a product look more favorable is the aesthetic and the appearance of it. And then when people dive a little bit deep and they see the functionality, those are two core things that help prospects select a product that might be a good fit for them.
Would you say that's a conscious decision that somebody makes or subconscious?
I think that depends on how savvy the users are. And you get quite a range depending on what sectors you're in. So you have early adopters in tech, you know, those people that are really excited about tech, they're really clued up. They love products and gadgets, and they're quite familiar. So they will appreciate a good UI and good UX, and they know when they see it. They appreciate the craftsmanship that's and consideration that's gone into that. But then you will have sectors that might be more late adopters of technology. I would imagine, say, let's just take, for instance, legal technology. So you might have lawyers that are starting to use a software, and they're just coming from a different background. And maybe UX and UI are not topics that they've had a lot of exposure to before. So for them, it might be a more subconscious, intuitive thing that they notice, but a sales process that might educate them on like why that product's a good fit for them is probably going to also help with that decision. So yeah, I mean that's the beauty of it. There's such a range of users and customers within SaaS, because it's really kind of permeated into all industries and sectors by now.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. Well, one of the things that I talk with my clients is, you know, about pricing models and making sure that there's like a way to allow people to jump up. So the different tiers that you have, tier A is just enough for what you need, but you need a little bit more. So you want to actually jump over to tier B. But then if you're actually a tier B user, the just right on the other side of tier C is about the stuff that you want. If you're following me in my headspace.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of wondering how with UI and UX, can you utilize these pricing models, and how can you showcase that to help push people forward?
Yeah, I mean, pricing is a really huge topic in SaaS, and it's a lot more complex and nuanced than it might appear, because we're very used to seeing, you know, three tiers of pricing plans. But there's a lot more that goes into it, a lot deeper kind of topics that go into it. But what we do in the product is we make sure that it's very transparent and easy for users to understand where value is in the product and how they can subscribe to that value, you know, which plans, how they upgrade. So our job is communicating that in a non-intrusive and kind of transparent way. One thing that we use quite frequently in our designs are upgrade flows. That's how we refer to them. So we like to think of experiences within software as a flow that the user will go through as on a journey. So I'll take your example of kind of being on a free trial. A user might be on a free trial and they have access to a range of features within a software. Now, some features might be premium, and they might have access to those during the free trial too. But we want to kind of highlight so that they're aware which features sit in which plans, for instance. And when it gets to the end of their free trial, we want to make this journey intuitive, seamless, and kind of natural, so that they get something like a reminder that leads to a call to action. They click on that, they go through to a page which might be a pricing or subscription page, which explains, you know, where they are in their trial, what options are available to them, and just enables them to make an informed decision, and then easy to upgrade. You know, so they click on the right plan for them, they go through to payment. Payment should be straightforward and easy. And after payment, even then, we're trying to reinforce their buying decision So they land on a new screen and we're like, great, let's get you started. You're going to benefit from, you know, XYZ kind of features. Here's how you get value from them. So we really think of things in terms of user flows and journeys, and we make those journeys, you know, we give them a goal and we make sure that the user has a really easy time and an enjoyable experience going through those user flows.
I think it's such an important part that you just said. I mean, there's many good things there, but one of the things that's forgotten by so many people is, you know, they think that the sale ends when the money's in the account. But I like that what you said is after they make that purchase, you're reinforcing it and you're kind of onboarding them again, even if they're already a client and they upgraded, you're onboarding them again to the new package that they are. And I think that's such an important part.
Yeah, I think that's, you've got to remember that during a sales process, there's friction for the buyer. The buyer's trying to evaluate what's right. And there's they might have reservations or concerns. And then, but once they make the purchase, there's almost a feeling of relief. It's like, oh, great. And we want them to experience that and not have a disappointing, oh, I've bought it and now, oh, nothing's really looks that different. Yeah. We want to give them that transition them to that satisfaction.
So I want to go back into what you were talking about on the trial side. Like if, let's say I'm on trial, you said you want to highlight the parts that are for the premium package or the tier B or tier C, whatever. How do you go about doing that? How do you highlight that without being pushy and salesy?
Yeah, it's all about kind of subtle messaging. And one thing that we use a lot is contextual messaging. So that's all about, you know, during a trial, a user is navigating and exploring things, and they might go and click on a screen and they, you know, there's a feature that they might want to try. And if they click on that feature, we might give them an introduction. And maybe there's some kind of labeling that helps them understand that's a premium feature or what planet sits in. There are a few different approaches to this, and they can be very specific and unique depending on the product. And that's where design plays such a great role, you know, because depending on your product, that will determine how you approach it. I saw a good example recently, product board. During the free trial, you can switch plans. So there's three plans, and when you're in the free trial, you can say, oh, I want to try out the basic plan. So then it lets you know, okay, now we're putting you in the basic plan, you can explore. And if you want to switch to, you know, the next plan up or the top plan, you can do that. So they will give you the whole experience of being in that plan. Other products might give you access to everything, but with restricted usage. And then once you upgrade, that restriction is, you know, removed. Or like there's the limit is expanded. So there's a number of ways of doing it. Other ways we'll highlight are by, say, in the navigation menu, we might just put some tags or some little highlighted graphics to let them know, oh, this is premium, this one's a premium feature. Also, when you land on a screen, we might have one thing we use a lot is empty state screens. So when you're a new user in software, you don't really have data in there, right? So you'll land on a screen, and instead of having just a blank screen, we design an experience for them when they land in that screen. And one of the things we might do in there is explain what the feature is, how they can use it, but would also might give an indication of where that sits in terms of plans and whatnot. So, yeah. Labeling, graphics, kind of UX messaging. And one of the elements that could be considered more contextual is, say, a user is trying out a feature and they think, oh, I'd like to add somebody on my team here. That would be cool because we'd collaborate using this CRM, for instance. So if they were to click on add a user, we might show them the dialogue for adding a new user, but also let them know, hey, you have three users in your free trial account, and then after that you'll have to upgrade. So it's just like the messaging to let them know where the limitations are of the plan, and you can do that in, yeah, labeling and then also contextual manner.
One of the times I experienced it that I can remember, obviously I experience this all the time, but is Canva. Yeah. You know, when you sign up for Canva, they show you like some of the, they've got like a little golden crown, I think it is.
That's it.
That shows that, okay, these are the premium features that you're not going to get after the trial. I like that because it's very
all the clip-ons.
Exactly. So when you're scrolling through,
Canva is great for having so much good free content and functionality. And it's such a great model because people adopt the product, they get to use it, and then eventually they do. There are templates that you can buy, and there are also plans that you can upgrade to. So, I mean, that's a classic good example of a freemium model.
So we talked a lot about this, and a lot of the examples, I think, are kind of also, let me rephrase that. Is this good for SaaS companies that are, you know, at the $50, $100 a month kind of thing, or are these kind of different mechanisms you should be applying also in the five figures, six figure, seven figure kind of SaaS products?
Yeah. I mean, there's this depends a lot on your kind of customer profile and your ACV, your average contract value. So the what's really popular is product-led growth right at the moment. So a lot of these are your lower cost plans, and they're mass market SaaS, and it's all about users being able to try out a product, be completely self-sufficient, purchase when they need to, upgrade when they need to, and they don't need support and they don't need training. So this is like the becoming the standard for SaaS. Now, these kind of products also sell to enterprise. So the higher contract levels are referred to as enterprise sales in SaaS, and they do involve a sales process and consulting and an annual contract, and the fees are much higher. And then there might be a lot more support. There might also be some custom requirements that the enterprise might have. So then it becomes more hands-on. Pricing is structured differently. And it depends on the model, but I've seen SaaS companies that use the lower tier kind of pricing, the $50-$100 a month models, as a kind of marketing method to get mass appeal and get a lot of users in. But they really make their profit on enterprise deals. So that's something that can be going on behind the scenes in a SaaS, but you won't be aware of the model. And then there are some products that just go for enterprise, you know, and they're not such mass market, but they're doing bigger kind of sales processes, 6 month, 1 year to close, you know, deals that might be, you know, 500K or 1 million. So yeah. there's a big range, and the kind of value and the complexity determines the sales process. And then also, you know, how that runs in the product. So I guess the more, how I'd explain it is that, like, the more complex and involved and higher ticket sale is going on, the more that's having interactions and sales teams and support, and rather than the kind of like self-serve users signing up to, you know, the $50 a month kind of plans.
So I was the first salesperson for a company called Logs.io. It's a log analytics platform.
Oh, cool.
And they did that. They implemented that kind of cycle where they have a $100 tier and a $500 a month tier. And that kind of was like the lead generation. Is sure, we get the people in, but what happens is first of all, those people become a lot more serious because they're paying. But then it allows you to open the door to talk to them because now they're actually a client. There's no pressure. And then now you could understand their use case and what they actually need, and then you could grow the account to the five and six figure deals that they actually need.
That's it. So what's been happening now is traditionally software had this approach of a top down. So the C-level execs at companies would be the buyers, and they'd buy a software contract, and they'd have a bunch of seats or users, and they would then give it, you know, pass it down to their teams and say, okay, hey, we're using this software, everyone gets trained on it. But with the rise of product-led growth, it's more what we refer to as a bottom-up sales approach. So you've got executives in companies that are trying out products, and they will try a product because they need it for their day-to-day job. And they find that it's really useful. It helps them achieve what they're trying to do. And then they're going to request from their manager, and the kind of sale moves up the chain that way rather than from the top down. And that's one way you would refer to it as your kind of like lead mechanism, because then you're getting higher up to the decision makers in a corporate company, and that's probably where you're going to do those 5-6 figure enterprise deals.
Yeah. Interesting. So I've definitely seen that, and I think more and more people are tending to go that bottom-up kind of approach, and also product-led growth. I think it goes in combination, the two of them. No?
Yeah. It's more and more common that's how it goes nowadays. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. What are some of the mistakes that you see a lot of people doing with UI UX as far as sales would go? Let me rephrase that again, or add to it. Sorry. What are people doing that are stopping the growth that they're not aware of?
Yeah. It's difficult because this kind of, the thing that impacts this quite a bit starts at the very early stage of a SaaS company. So it's very common for software companies with a founding team to have limited resources. And so they build a product usually from a technical point of view. So they're mostly using developers to just build a product. And the developers are also trying to do the best layout and design that they can. It's not a bad way to get started because you have limited resources. So you have to work with what you've got. And you also have this massive challenge of validating a product and getting traction. So it's actually see that people will use and pay for this product. So they will start building with developers only. And if it goes well and the business continues several years down the line, they've got a product which technically and functionally is great, but from a UX and UI point of view, might be lacking. It could be a lot better. At the same time, software moves quickly, right? So you have a lot of competitors, they're moving fast, some of them are funded. So if you're competing with others and you've gotten to this stage and they have a much better UX and UI, then you're struggling to kind of keep up with them on that side. So they might be winning in terms of attracting new users, converting them from free trial to upgrades and things like that. So one mistake is leaving design too late. And then when they get to it, it's quite a big job because you have to redesign the product, and then that involves a lot of development work. So sometimes that's reworking. I'll say the next thing is more general. It's not necessarily being familiar or knowing the common user flows that are effective for maximizing sales, expanding accounts, converting free trials to paid customers. So because we're, as a team, we're constantly designing software. We've designed lots and lots of software. So we know when we come onto a product, the first thing we're looking at is, this onboarding isn't great. Okay, in the free trial, we're not communicating very well where the value is and how to access it. There's not a clear upgrade flow. And then actually, once users are activated, retention isn't great because the product experience is lacking. The product might be confusing. So that's where UX and UI and investing in it becomes really powerful, because if the software company has gotten to a stage where they have good revenue, they have a really good paying customer base, then it's kind of like they're leaving a lot of money on the table by not investing in the product experience and the UI. So it's more like it could be competing priorities, because it's really a challenging thing building a software product and succeeding. It's a really challenging thing. So there's a lot of competing priorities. So it's hard to look at it as a mistake more than a kind of oversight or not being prioritized or just another thing that's quite expensive for software companies to do and finding the right time and, you know.
It's endless, huh?
Yeah. But, you know, any business has these kind of challenges. So that's how I describe it mostly for SaaS.
So, I mean, from your experience, I mean, this is what you do for a living and your company does. When is the optimal time for you to come in and help a company?
Well, we're a specific service. So I would, like, for us, there is a almost a minimum requirement of funding for them for it to be a sound like financial decision. So we're usually working with SaaS companies that are at pre-seed, seed, up to Series A. That's when the product has got to a point where it's validated. They feel they have product market fit. They feel they have customers, but they really, really have gotten to a point where they feel that the UI and UX has become a priority.
You're finding that with pre-seed?
Okay. So what I'll explain about the pre-seed kind of clients that we'd work with are design educated or design savvy. So they know the value and they might have raised say $500,000 or $1 million dollars. And they're going to be building using design first at an earlier stage. So I'd say that's always a good practice. So some of the best examples are for startups that have a really good technical capability in terms of like a CTO or really good developer, but also have introduced design at an early stage, whether that's with a freelancer or they have a founding member who's comes from a design background, manage to introduce it from an early stage. There are other ones that will get funding and then they could work with us, but usually, I mean, that's not typically their priority at that stage. It's usually kind of around seed and after that that we love it if we get involved early because we have a real impact. We can make a really, really big impact early on. And it's refreshing because it's a different experience for us than joining a product much later. Because quite often we'll work on, say, bootstrapped software companies that have had a product for 10 years but never had a product design team work on it. So then we're in a big, it's really fulfilling, but it's a big redesign project, a lot of rethinking and like big improvements. So it's quite a different beast to designing something at a very early stage where there's just two or three features and we can design out the experience, you know, in an ideal way from the start.
You know, throughout my career, I've worked with a lot of designers, and I think it's such a, if you're not in design, I think it's a, I don't know if it's necessarily a forgotten thing or it's maybe an underrated importance. I could tell you that whenever I've worked with an earlier stage company and then all of a sudden they bring in a designer, it's so much easier to sell. It's so much better workflow on even the demo itself. The demo becomes so much more impactful when you have a good design on there. So I know from my experience how that's helped, but can you explain why a demo would be a good, how impactful that would be to have a good UI UX for a demo?
Yeah. Okay. So for software companies that are selling or acquiring customers predominantly through demos, it's that the job of the demo is to align the prospect with the value in the product so that they perceive the problem that they have and they feel the pain of it and they associate the solution, the way to solve that problem is the product. So as product designers, we become very familiar with the value in a product. We get to know the features intimately. We get to know, you know, what users value and why. And really, if that can translate back into the demo, then the demo is really serving the product in the correct light. Often, the best demos, I think, are more of a sales conversation than a showing off of the product, because they're really understanding the prospect's pain point. And then there's software has a set of features. So depending on the pain points that the prospect has, you can refer to the value from a feature that will solve that problem or another feature that will solve a certain problem for them. So it's more about communicating it that way. And so UX and UI really is almost going to fulfill the promise of that. You know, once they start using it, they will see that, oh yeah, from what we saw and heard in the demo, the product is really fulfilling what our expectation and what we were sold. So we really love to have that kind of feedback from the product going back all the way into the demo, even though we're not responsible for that. But we feel like there's continuity, you know, throughout how the product's reflected and communicated as well.
So I like my demos to be, you know, even though the meeting is maybe half an hour or an hour, I like my demo to actually only be about 5 minutes. The rest of it should be talking and discussing and exploring their problem and the solution that they need.
Yeah.
But one, as I said, from my own personal experience, the UI and UX where it's helped me a lot is when the demo, when the product can show the flow of solving a pain really well, instead of having to click in 5 different windows to show the pain and I only need to show it in 2, it allows the customer or the prospect not to get lost in a sea of information and allows them to quickly and easily understand and internalize the importance of what I'm trying to show them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really neat. If the product's done designed well and the experience is great, then that makes it really easy to demo. And it will, like, you know, show that in its best light. The product looks great. You can see that it's intuitive and easy to navigate. They'll get that impression in the demo. But yeah, I like what you were talking about of, you know, 5 minutes of demo and most of the call being a conversation. Have you ever been on one of those demos where it's like you come on the call and someone just talks for 25 minutes with a screen share of just the interface? Man, it's really painful to sit through that. So I wouldn't recommend that.
Or it's not just a screen share of their demo. It's like first 10 slides about their founders and the background of the company.
Yeah. It's not the way to demo. So, and if you have 5 minutes or just a very brief part of showing off the product, if the product looks great and demonstrates a good experience, I mean, that's going to make a big impact.
Yeah, absolutely. Peter, thanks for coming on. Thanks for sharing these insights. For those that want to learn more and hear more of your knowledge, where how could they find you and reach out to you?
Okay, so we have a few channels. Our website is useractive.io. So if you're interested and want to help with your SaaS, you can always book a brief call with me there. I'm always happy to talk and help and strategize. We do a lot of YouTube videos, educational kind of videos on SaaS design. So it's YouTube, /useractive. You could find our channel there. And I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so you can always find me. He's a loving on LinkedIn there. I appreciate being on the show. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. Bye.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Startup Sales with Adam Springer. Subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Contact Adam about speaking engagements or consulting services at adam@startupsales.io.